Locked On Kings, your daily podcast on the Sacramento Kings.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Buddy Hield, De'Aaron Fox, and Willie Cauley-Stein. 6.1 to go, down by two. Inbounds near side, the rookie Fox to put it in play. Overplay to the left, has to hurry, gets rid of it just in time to Cauley-Stein. 4 seconds to go. Back to Fox, eludes the defender. Baseline floater for the tie. He's got it as the horn sounds. De'Aaron Fox, who was rejected just moments ago on a critical possession to take the lead, gets what proves to be an overtime forcing basket. 100-100. We've got to get 5 minutes of free basketball. One left-hand dribble, hands the ball off the heel, rocks in rhythm for three. He's got the triple. Buddy Buckets finally gets a three-pointer. He's got 14 in the ballgame, and the Kings lead it now 105-102. Crab on the deep left wing. He's going to try to answer back for three. He does. He nails the three-pointer on the deep left angle, even at 105. 20 points for Crab. We're tied at 105. We resume play. Bogdanovich now with a screen from Cauley-Stein. Frees up. He'll try for three. Bogey's got the bucket. 108-105. 2:45 and counting in overtime. 19 now for Bogdan Bogdanovich. And the Nets need some magic. Inbounds comes to Allen in the front court. Feeds across court. Deflected by the Kings. Stolen. Deflected by Buddy. Grabbed by Bogey. Two, Buddy. He'll twist up a... Well, he's not even going to shoot it. He had it back to the basket as time expired. So after losing five straight games and seven of the last eight, the Sacramento Kings are victorious for a second time this season against the Brooklyn Nets.
Well, how about that? Great call by the G-man, Gary Gerald, there on the Kings Radio Network. The Sacramento Kings get clutch performances from their rookie De'Aaron Fox and other rookie Bogdan Bogdanovich, and they get the win in overtime against the Brooklyn Nets inside the Golden 1 Center to kick off the month of March. Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Locked On Kings podcast. My name is Matt George, and I'm still buzzing after that great game last night. You know, it's so funny how we'll look at matchups, and on paper, you'll see a matchup between the Sacramento Kings and the Brooklyn Nets, and the first thing you'll think of is, man, these are two bottom feeder teams. This is not sexy by any means. I could barely recognize half the names on any roster. Oh, it's just going to be that kind of boring game that I would not want to spend time watching. Well, turns out those games have a large percentage of those games end up turning into great, close, fun games down the stretch. This game was no different. I don't know why we are surprised anymore. The Sacramento Kings battled all the way. It really was back and forth, a fast-paced game. The only reason you would really be bored is because the two teams aren't necessarily the most exciting teams to watch on the planet, but you got great performances out of Demari Carroll for the Nets. Also, the Sacramento Kings relied heavily on really a team effort. Willie Cauley-Stein was great in the first quarter, had 12 points in that first quarter, got abused, unfortunately, a lot of times defensively. But overall, that is a great win for the Sacramento Kings. And here's the one thing I want to address as tankers. And coming up on today's show, we have ABC's Sean Cunningham. He spent some time with me and we chatted a lot about tanking and about the direction that the Sacramento Kings have been going in. Sean has been deeply rooted and plugged in with the Sacramento Kings, has covered the Sacramento Kings for a long time, well over a decade here in Sacramento. So his opinion is absolutely warranted, and he's going to share all of that with you here coming up, all of his thoughts on everything we talked about. But you know my feelings on tanking. Let me just say this about last night. If the Kings had won last night, they would have been, by half a game, the worst team in the NBA and had the highest percentage chance to lock up the number one overall pick. They would have had that advantage over the Orlando Magic. With that win, they are now tied with a couple other teams, I think two or three other teams, for now the fourth worst record in the NBA and the fourth best chance to get the number one overall pick. But I will take that any day of the week based off of the win we got last night. You got a win in overtime against a team you're supposed to beat at home. You got clutch moments from your rookies. You got a buzzer-beating, game-tying basket from your star rookie in De'Aaron Fox. You went wire-to-wire, a close game, and you also did it all offensively without who I consider to be the Kings' bailout guy in Zach Randolph. Randolph didn't play at all. And the Kings battled. They played hard. Yes, it was against the Brooklyn Nets, and you can bring that argument as much as you want. Oh, it was just the Brooklyn Nets. It's not that important. Those are the games you're supposed to win in your building. To be a good team, you have to win the games first that you're supposed to win at home. Check. Kings did that. Step two is also close out close games. Check. Kings did that as well. And step three, don't tank. If you want to be a good king, a good team, you don't tank. And the Kings didn't tank last night. They played hard. They got the win. And I'm feeling a whole hell of a lot better than I would feel if the Kings had the best percentage chance to have the number one overall pick. That is until probably the Orlando Magic lose later tonight. And then everything just goes back to the way it was. Happy to be joined by ABC's Sean Cunningham. Sean is someone who is so deeply ingrained into what the Sacramento Kings are and what they do and what they're trying to do and what they have done over the past decade. Sean really began as a reporter, has been working and covering this team and deeply ingrained in this team since back in 2002. Is that right, Sean?
Yeah. 2002 was my first full year covering the team, and it was back there at where you call your stomping grounds right now at Sports 1140 KHDK, and that was my first kind of taste of being a sports journalist, a reporter, and I, of course, use journalist lightly because especially in radio, it's so tough. I mean, people laugh at what really goes into journalism, and then they think they get this idea of, oh, you're a member of the press, you're writing all the time. Well, radio guys take kind of a hit when it comes to sports journalism, and they're right there with you. And you know, it's all the same rules that apply in writing and radio and television. They all still apply in the digital world and radio as well. So, I kind of cut my teeth there at KHDK. Now I'm over at ABC 10 locally here in Sacramento, and couldn't be more thrilled. It's over a decade long of covering local sports and the Kings, and 2002 was the first full year, and the Kings were at such a high, and you look at them now, and they're on the complete other end of the spectrum. So it's been a fun ride.
So for better or for worse, though, you've been plugged in really with the front lines of this Kings franchise over this decade plus of struggles. Like you said, you started at probably the pinnacle, as high as you can get, and have been slowly declined into the valleys of maybe 5-6 years ago, especially with the potential Sacramento Kings relocation. And now, hopefully, we're back on our way up again. Sean, thank you so much for joining us. What are your thoughts, first and foremost, on the direction that the Kings are going? We can start all the way back with the trade of DeMarcus Cousins, which we know garners so much interest. Starting from there and to where we are currently today, how do you feel about the direction that the Kings are going in?
Ooh, yeah, that's a lot. I think if you go back to that trade, I think, Vlade Divac and the organization certainly took their share of hits as well as in terms of critiques and criticisms, but were also praised because it was really difficult, where you can argue that they may not have gotten enough in trading a talent like DeMarcus Cousins, a perennial all-star, a member of the Olympic team, a gold medalist, an all-NBA guy. I mean, considered widely to be the best center in the game. What you can certainly argue that they didn't get enough for him. I was one of those guys that kind of questioned the timing of it, especially with the bill of goods that the team was kind of selling all along, which was we want to be in the eighth spot. We want to be contending for the playoffs. And at the time that they do it, they're a game and a half removed from that eighth spot. Like it or not, whether that whole goal of contending for the playoffs and the eighth seed is your goal is a flawed one or not, which I think it is, because fact of the matter is half of the teams in the league make the playoffs. So if that's what you're contending to do, but again, as Kings fans know, it's baby steps, right? I mean, they hadn't seen the playoffs since 2006, 2007. So it's been a long time, and Kings fans are salivating for that opportunity again. They know what the playoffs are like, and it may not feel like this in most tournaments, but you just got to get in. You just got to get in to kind of get that taste. The one thing I've always credited them is making the decision that no, we weren't going to extend DeMarcus Cousins and give him a max. And whether or not you agree with that, I respect the decision. I respect the decision that they said, you know what, we're not going to give this player a $40 million a year deal, upwards of $45 million a year for a guy that, in essence, you can't really trust in terms of behavioral. And if that's kind of the road you're going down, I at least applaud that decision. You've made that decision. How you kind of ultimately got to that decision can certainly be picked apart and criticized. But I do applaud them for making that decision, because that's what you have to do. You stuck with it, and you're now going to suffer the ramifications, because rebuilds, as you know, Matt, are extremely ugly.
Yes.
And this is what rebuilding looks like. And look, I've covered a 17-win team before, and they were a lot better off in terms of let me back up. That 17-win team that I covered had more veterans on the team than this Kings team currently has. I mean, you have 10 players within the first 2 years of service in the NBA. That is not ideal for an NBA coach at all. And to have to sit through a rebuild is very tough, because at the end of the day, the head coaches are the ones that are, you know, held accountable for winning. And when you get down to it, this team is currently sitting with, 18 wins on the season? with about 20-so games remaining in the season. I mean, it's going to be ugly, and I think you can expect another year of this for sure at minimum.
I appreciate the fact that you brought up the struggles and how difficult it is from a coaching perspective, because a lot of times fans don't necessarily understand that or give coaches the credit that they deserve through going through rebuilds like this. I talked about Dave Yeager a lot on yesterday's podcast, played an interview that he was on with Grant Napier and Doug Christie here on KHDK. And one of the things I talked about with Dave is that, one, I believe he's absolutely the right man for the job based off of his experience with the G League and in the D League. And number two, Dave has this very unique and positive attitude, and also this kind of cheekiness about him, to where he can smile and keep a positive attitude and keep upbeat about his franchise and his roster, despite them going through the peaks and valleys of a very difficult rebuild and a very difficult 18, 19, 20 win season. Can you reiterate a little bit about his role in this developmental period, and your thoughts on, do you believe if he is the right fit for the job here in Sacramento?
Well, I'll answer the question this way. I don't know if he's the right fit, but he certainly gets my vote of confidence, because I think for someone to be the right fit and someone say, you know what, this isn't the right guy, I'd automatically, my reactive question would be, well, who are you replacing him with? Mm-hmm. I mean, who's going to be better? The fact of the matter is, Dave Yeager's been here. He's now in his second full NBA season. They picked up his option for his fourth year and guaranteed that. So they've at least afforded him from a financial standpoint, we have your back, coach. We know you're not going to win. There's certainly going to be the expectation of improving. And like I said earlier, at the end of the day, it comes down to wins and losses. But the organization has done their part. I think Dave Yeager has done a hell of a job with this team. And I'll even go back to last year when the organization, like I said, before they trade DeMarcus Cousins, is a game and a half from the eighth spot. And I when I reflect on the season in a whole, that first season with Dave Yeager, I look at it and I go, you know what? Dave Yeager kept them in so many games. He kept them competitive. I think he manages a game very well. I know people can pick apart rosters and certainly have their beliefs on him utilizing the young players now that they're going through this rebuild, and how he utilizes his veterans, and how that, you know, is a really difficult mesh of trying to bring both of them and also remain competitive and put an entertaining product on the floor, because at the end of the day, this is still entertainment. It is sports. It is entertainment. It doesn't really matter that much, but people treat it as if it's the number one thing going. And people are spending hard-earned money to come out and see a team. And when they've got 18 wins, if they want to see Vince Carter, by God, put Vince Carter on the floor. He's on the roster. So I think I really think that Dave Yeager has done a really, really good job. I love the way he's managed his players. The players, there's not many that are going to speak that ill of him. And when they do, it's over rather petty things anyway. And you know, I think at the end of the day, the majority of the locker room does support their head coach and the staff. Let's not discredit what his staff has done. They have an entirely different staff, even from a year ago, when you've got all these head coach and you have all these assistants and these player development coaches. There's really a coach for almost every single player within that organization. And then let's not forget, you've got the likes of Peja Stojakovic running around and Vlade Divac running around, guys that have obviously bring something different to the table, even though they're in the front office. They have a very hands-on approach with a lot of these players. So I like the way the makeup of the staff is. I like what he's brought. I like the fact that, you know, people look at Scalabissiere, and I'll use him as an example from earlier in the season, and he's kind of getting jerked around, and then he's out of the rotation, and then he's up in Reno again, and people are like, God, you know, you thought Scal might be beyond that. Like, why is he going back up there? And then you go and talk to Scal, and he's like, no, I love Coach. I love what he's been completely honest with me. He said, this is what we're going to do. He knows what he's going to expect. Nothing caught him off guard. And he supports his head coach, probably the poster child of that locker room in terms of supporting their head coach. So in a long-winded response, I think he's done a really good job. I don't know what people were really expecting. Granted, I think even with the 18 wins that they have, I think they haven't been, you know, there hasn't been a whole lot of games that they've been blown out or been entirely not competitive. And I think, you know, it really comes down to a quarter in almost every single game that you look back and you can circle and go, boy, something went wrong here, and it's kind of upended the game.
Sean, I don't know if it's a coping mechanism for fans to believe and label the Sacramento Kings as a team that is tanking in these final 20-plus games of the season, whether they want to believe that this team is good enough to win games, but they're intentionally trying to lose or not. That's completely their prerogative and up to them. I've talked their ears off personally about my opinions on tanking. It's a word that I absolutely can't stand. It's disgusting to me, and I think it's very inappropriate when it comes to the situation that the Sacramento Kings are in, because to me, tanking suggests that you are intentionally trying to hinder the development of your team in order to win and look towards not even a guaranteed draft pick, but a percentage for a good draft pick on in the future. What are your thoughts on quote-unquote tanking around the Sacramento Kings? Is that a strategy you think they genuinely are trying to pursue, that this number one pick is more important right now than the current players they're trying to develop on this roster?
I would say that no, the tanking is not something that players and coaches on this team think about at all. They don't concern themselves with it whatsoever. That's what fans should hear and need to hear, because whereas, yes, I think front office types and in the big picture, you look at the pick that comes your way in 2018, which is going to be a lottery pick again, and you look at that and you go, oh yeah, they need to secure as high a pick as possible. The good news is your players and coaches don't give a damn about that pick, and they're going out there and competing every night.
Yep.
I agree with you, Matt. I think tanking is disgusting. I think it robs your fan base of what they pay money to come in and see. But the good news is I think this team doesn't buy into that. I mean, certainly I think the organization is definitely aware of the situations they're in, and it is a little bit unique, obviously, especially with not having a pick in 2019. But luckily they've stashed Harry Giles away. You know, he'll become a rookie next year, kind of like the Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid variety, where his sophomore season ends up being his rookie year in the NBA. So that kind of helps you stomach that a little bit better, but at the same time, from day one, this entire season has been about developing the young players. And certainly, you know, when you came out in January and said we're going to start resting the some of the veterans on the team to allow for more opportunity for the younger players, well, that was always in the cards. And I think it's been able to be stomached a little bit better because of the fact that guys like Scal Labissiere and even Frank Mason to another degree had injuries that they were dealing with, so that, you know, you had to lean on some of those vets a little bit more during that time. And then obviously when you get rid of George Hill in the trade, you know, and I don't even put George Hill in that same category as a Zach Randolph or even a certainly not as a Vince Carter, who's 41 years old. But I looked at George Hill and people are like, oh, man, he's getting in the way of De'Aaron Fox, blah, blah, blah. I said, who cares? George Hill is a guy who, yes, is a veteran in this league, but he's also in the prime of his career. He's not a guy that he needs to be shutting it down just so he can make way for this young kid. So that also kind of a feather in the cap of Dave Yeager and how he kind of managed that. So, when it comes to tanking, I'm with you. I think it's disgusting. I think the organization is well aware of it. They know the unique situation that they're in, but they don't want to screw with basketball karma. You know, I think you've seen it before where the team has rested players in order to kind of give themselves a disadvantage in winning a game late in the season when the season, you know, it's kind of like I equate it to baseball when you get the July call-ups, August call-ups, and you're already out of the playoffs. And so now it's all about looking at your youth. And, you know, when you're playing your youth to gain them experience, that ultimately it doesn't really matter about wins and losses at that point. And I think that's much to the same approach that what a bad NBA team does. And, you know, you think about your future at hand, but you still go out and you play the games. If you win, you applaud it. And I think, you know what, there would be nothing greater. And I know Kings fans might, who are for tanking, might kind of shiver at this, but,
yes.
I think there'd be nothing greater than what Buddy Hield said the other day, which he would love to see the team, and his goal is for the team is to finish with a 500 record with the remaining 25 games. And I think, you know, it's good for you because you're not you're not about trying to secure your future for the organization. You're doing what's in the best interest for you. And there's guys that are approaching free agency, and there's a lot to think about for some of these guys. So they're not all that wild about, you know, looking at a draft pick coming in here and possibly taking their spot.
Last thing for you, Sean. I'm going to use a football example because I think it's very recent and very important. Jimmy Garoppolo and the San Francisco 49ers. The Niners were basically battling with the Cleveland Browns for the right to call themselves the worst team in football. Both teams were looking at potentially going 0-16 for the entire season. Suddenly, the Niners pull this move, get Jimmy Garoppolo, go on a six-game win streak to end the season, and go into an offseason. Yes, they're not going to be in the conversation for a top five or even top three pick, but they have their franchise guy going forward. And ultimately, I think they feel a hell of a lot better than even if they did have the number one overall pick. So I equate that to what the Sacramento Kings are trying to do. If a De'Aaron Fox or a Buddy Hield or even a Bogdan Bogdanovich to some extent average 20, 25 points over the remainder of this season, and you went into this offseason feeling good that you have a piece at least to build around, would that be ideal? Is that something the Kings should shoot for? And is there someone on this roster that could actually live up to that?
Yeah, it's funny because I think that it's a fair analogy to a point with using the 49ers and what they were able to accomplish, and even that fan base and that organization going in there. You know, man, you're looking at 0-9, you finished 6-10, and you're the happiest you could have been. But at the end of the day, they got Jimmy Garoppolo, and in the NFL, you're looking at quarterbacks are the end all be all. It's a little bit different in the NBA. Granted, point guard is probably the most relatable of the positions going from the NBA to the NFL, point guard to quarterback. So, yeah, I think you're feeling pretty good about that if you have a De'Aaron Fox in your future. But De'Aaron Fox also hasn't had nearly the impact that Jimmy Garoppolo did in those games. So I think you do kind of I think the analogy still works. If you can go out there and string something together where all of a sudden you're feeling good, and even though if it hurts your draft order be damned, it's all about developing, and you're entering that offseason as an upswing, I think that would be incredibly valuable. And I think that actually that helps more with a dynamic and going into an off season and going into another year of a development year where with all these young players, I think that helps a lot more than even landing a top three pick, because still you can land a top three pick. You still have to come through. You still have to pick the right guy, and you still have to develop it. And that alone has not been easy for the Kings. You can argue whatever happens this year with these rookies remains to be seen, but the last draft pick that the Kings landed that ultimately became something was DeMarcus Cousins, and you just traded him to start all over again. So it kind of came full circle in that regard. But I do agree with you. I think people should feel better if they were entering the offseason at an upswing where they strung a bunch of games together and these guys kind of got that confidence that, hey, you know what, we're seeing something here. We're going to carry this into the offseason and something to build on. If you're in your remaining games where, you know, a lot of teams start resting players, get ready for the playoffs, and you lose seven straight going into the NBA season, that's not a good feeling at all.
If you are a fan of the Sacramento Kings and want to follow the Sacramento Kings basically as close as you can possibly follow them, Sean Cunningham is your guy. Check him out on Twitter, @SeanCunningham. You can also check out all of his post-game videos and analysis and everything on ABC10 and ABC.com. Sean, thank you again so much for taking the time, and we're hoping to just survive these final 20 games of the season and go into this summer feeling good, because I think we both can agree this summer is going to be very, very interesting and active for the Sacramento Kings team.
Well, I appreciate it, Matt. You're far too kind with that, with all those accolades on the way out, and especially starting off the interview, you know, pointing out that I got here in 2002 and then everything's been dreck since then. So it started up on such a high and then went to a low, but seriously, I appreciate it and look forward to joining you again.
You heard it here first on the Locked On Kings podcast. It's Sean Cunningham's fault. He is the reason why the Kings are in the situation that they are. Sean, thank you so much. We'll definitely have to do it again.
All right, buddy. Thanks, Matt.
My thanks again to Sean for taking the time and joining me here on Locked On Kings. And that is going to do it for us here on Locked On Kings. The Sacramento Kings are back in action tomorrow night, Saturday night, and Sunday. They have a doubleheader against the Utah Jazz on Saturday. They also have the New York Knicks on Sunday, games 2 and 3 of 12 home games here in the month of March. And the Kings looking to try and build off of, maybe get a little winning streak going against the Utah Jazz, trying to build off of this win last night over the Brooklyn Nets. I'm jazzed. I'm buzzed. It's always fun coming off of a win to do a show. I hope you feel the same as well. Share your thoughts, whether you're on Tank's side, Team Tank, or Team Win. You're excited about last night's performance. Your thoughts on last night's performance in general, send it to me. Tweet me at MattGeorgeKHDK. Would love to get into a conversation with you and hear from you. But until next week, that'll do it for me here on Locked On Kings. My name is Matt George. Have a great weekend. Hopefully two more W's for the Sacramento Kings coming up. And we'll see you next time here on the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Kings, your daily Sacramento Kings podcast.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.